we're back in the Renaissance, Papa Bear. How have you been in the last couple of weeks since our last episode? All good?
Doing good. The weather's getting warmer here. I'm enjoying some really good days. So life, and of course, that has nothing to do with my wife going back to work and being physically gone from the house a couple of days a week. No, it's the weather.
It's the weather.
Yeah. I'm enjoying the weather. Finn and I go for a walk. And
The weather, mother.
Yeah, no, things are looking good here. Starting on the addition soon. So pretty soon, my piece of shit hovel will be slightly bigger piece of shit hovel. So I'm really looking forward to that.
I thought you were going to start learning addition. I thought that's what you were saying.
No, that's a mountain I'll probably never cross.
I keep thinking, does Ray realize I'm only sending him like 10% of the money I should be sending him? And I was like, thank God he doesn't know any addition.
I can't do the
multiplication.
Number thing.
I mean, yeah.
No, I can't. Yeah. Yeah, there's a myth that the numbers go past 7, but I've seen no evidence of that. So.
11. Yeah. You can only count up to 11. Well, 10 and a quarter.
I skip a couple numbers, but I can get there. Yeah.
Well, we're back to LDV part something. We don't know. Episode 117, though. The last episode we talked about St. Jerry. St.
Yes.
Jerry of the Rock beating himself. As mentioned that he was a little bit depressed, but we also mentioned that, he was really serious about capturing what he wanted to capture.
Yes.
In these paintings. It wasn't, he took this shit seriously, more seriously, maybe, than some of his contemporaries. Not that his contemporaries were slouches.
No.
Oh, no. Don't get me wrong. No. His contemporaries were
masters. Yes, in their own right. But he envisioned something that he couldn't make, and he couldn't bring into fruition yet. And that, I think, bothered him. His imagination's up here. His skill is still down here. But I think it's ironic. A couple of episodes ago, we were talking about Leo being an outsider, knowing that he was an outsider, even enjoying that he was an outsider. And I said, it's not like his notebooks have any kind of woe is me entries into them. I'm now a goth. But that's actually about to change.
Yeah. Like us, I forgot what I was going to say then. Like us, far be it from me to compare us to Leonardo da Vinci, Ray, but like us,
sure,
he was a perfectionist.
Yeah.
Nothing. You know, we never put out a podcast unless it is absolutely the finest.
Yes.
The finest. I can't even get this sentence out. It's so ridiculous.
Yes.
I'll tell you, in all seriousness, I had this realization the other day. I was talking to Chrissy about podcasts. I remember in 2004, 2005, when I was somewhat famous for my podcasting, and I would be giving interviews on the media about podcasts and going and speaking at conferences in New York City and places like that about podcasting.
Cool.
And the topic would always come up: how long should a podcast be?
Yes.
And everyone else in the room would say 5 minutes, tops. 5 minutes, like 10 minutes, you're fucking stretching it because people can only concentrate for 5 minutes.
Yes.
And I was saying, fuck that shit. Like, make it as long as it needs to be, an hour, 2 hours. Like, my common answer was always, oh, well, how long is a book? How long should a book be?
Right.
It's as long as it is, right? You can have a short book, you can
Whatever
have a long
takes.
Book. And people go, well, that's different. Why? Well, because people can put a book down. They go, you got to put a fucking podcast down too, motherfucker.
Can't
that's
pause.
The point. You can pause and come back to it later. Can be as long as you want. And I used to say, look, most of my podcasts are roughly an hour, even back then, from the get-go.
Right.
From the very beginning, my podcasts were always roughly an hour long. And I used to say, well, an hour is about how long it takes to have a good conversation about anything.
Right. You know,
it takes about an hour to have a good conversation. You can have conversations that go longer, but you're about an hour. And today I said to Chrissy, she listens to a ton of podcasts, none of ours, obviously, but a ton of podcasts. I said, what do you reckon, your average podcast? She goes, oh, yeah, an hour. An hour is the standard now for podcasts.
Yeah.
So yet again, Cameron Riley.
Boom,
called it. Fucking, became the standard bearer of the hour-long podcast. Just like to point that out.
Can I just say real quick? Exactly. That reminded me, because I, you know, the very first podcast I listened to was yours with Sir J. David. And it was one of the episodes near the end. And at the very beginning of the episode, you said, okay, we're gonna at least get to this point in Napoleon's timeline. That show went on for an hour and a half, and you didn't even make it to that self-described deadline, because Sir David was just all over the fucking place. Don't get me wrong. It was awesome. But I just imagine you now that I know you going, God damn it, David, I said we were going to get this far, but didn't even make it. But I just will always remember that when I was raking
leaves. I think it took us like 4 hours to get
yes,
there.
Yes, yes. Yeah. I love that.
Those days, though, like when we started the Napoleon series, I think I famously said it was going to go for about 12 episodes. It went for...
You missed it. Yeah.
60, I think.
Right. That's Napoleon,
Well, no, that was just, you know, that was my first attempt at doing a long-form history show. I had no idea. And now, of course, you know, we do 25 episodes on the Yalta Conference. Like, we don't we don't give a shit now. But, you know, back then, I still
big deal.
Was thinking, okay, hell, this can't go on forever. I mean, we have to try and get through this.
Gotta die sometime. Yeah.
And, you know, obviously, when I started working with you, I gave up on that whole idea.
Right. That sounds right.
Anywho.
Yes.
Back to Leonardo da Vinci. Now, he wasn't just interested in capturing the motions of the body or the moti corporali in his work. He wanted to capture what he called the arti e moti mentali, the attitudes and motions of the mind.
He wants it
now,
all.
Yeah. No one knows more about the history of painting than you, Ray. Could you tell me, was this a new idea? Was this a revolutionary idea in painting?
I don't think it was new, but because we've been talking about it so much, almost like the Renaissance was, it's something that was maybe either rediscovered or put back into the forefront. But no, Pliny the Elder complimented Aristides, I'm not sure how to say his name, of Thebes, a 4th century BC painter, by saying he was able to be one of the first to express mentality, sentiments, character, and passions of a subject. So it's not new, but you almost get the feeling that it hasn't been around for a while, because here's Leo doing it, and we're talking about it like it's something that's either not common or hasn't been done in a while.
Aristides of Thebes.
Aristides. Yes.
I met a guy called Aristides once. He was the head of the tobacco fermentation process at Podomo in Nicaragua.
Cool.
Aristides Garcia, old Cuban man, lovely guy. Said he was about 78 when I met him. He started working in the cigar business when he was 10.
Wow.
His father was a roller, I think, in Cuba, and got him a job in Cuba helping out. Started smoking cigars at 10, and said he believed an average of 12 cigars a day every day of his life.
Was he about 4'2"? They say it's stunt your
career. No, big, tall, strapping. Started work at 5 o'clock every morning at 78. Strong as an ox. Never had a sick day in his life. He said he had two sons who were both doctors, and they told him cigars were good for him, so he just kept smoking them.
Yeah. Keep going.
Anyway, Aristides of Thebes famously painted Alexander the Great's portrait and one of his battles. So, very famous painter.
Yeah.
Alberti, I mentioned in the last episode that Leonardo was a big fan of Alberti's book on painting. Right. Alberti said that movements of the soul are made known by movements of the body.
Ooh.
So you had to capture more than just what the body's doing. And if you look at, like, okay, I love Botticelli. Love Botticelli. But that said, you look at the faces of Venus or in both of Venus or in the Primavera, all those sorts of things, not a lot going on in the faces of Botticelli's characters.
I got to be honest with you. When I look at them, it kind of reminds me looking down with the women that I currently happen to be stripping at the time. Just not a lot. Feelings, senses, emotions, not a lot. Barely awake. I don't know. Pretty much a blank look. Like, I can't believe I'm here doing this. But yeah, not a lot.
You've roofied them beforehand, so it's...
No, that's the step two of my program. Now I can't sell that to people. Fuck, Cam, come on.
You Cosby'd them. That's why they have the blank look in their face. It's obvious.
But because it's a blank slate, I can project, oh my God, she's having the time of her life.
Yeah.
That's step three. Anyway.
Yeah. Go ahead. Well, I know you like to carry lipstick around with you, and you paint a big smile on their face the lipstick.
Oh, it really speeds things up, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why so serious?
Are you awake? It doesn't matter. Anyway.
But the thing is with Botticelli, there wasn't a lot going on in the faces of his characters, but he could get away with it because he had titties.
Yes.
And if you're not looking at the face. You know,
tits Trump. There's a coffee mug in there somewhere. Tits Trump.
Anyway. Tits for Trump?
No. Just tits Trump all. No.
Oh yeah, right. But Leonardo is taking this stuff seriously, and he talked about this a lot in his notebooks. The good painter has to paint two principal things: man and the intention of his mind.
Right.
The first is easy and the second is difficult because the latter has to be represented through gestures and movements of the limbs. The movement which is depicted must be appropriate to the mental state of the figure. These motions and postures of figures should display the true mental state of the originator of these motions in such a way they can mean nothing else. Movements should announce the motions of the mind.
Exactly. Telling a story through a painting and making it look as lifelike as possible. And again, this might sound like if you're a 16-year-old listening to this, first of all, I'm terribly sorry. But second of all, you might be going, yeah, duh, that's common sense. Well, maybe not so much because, again, he's one of these people who helps comes along and establishes there needs to be a sense of motion and emotions in the paintings, and it needs to be able to tell a story, and you feel like literally like it's, you know, someone's taken a picture. They've just done it with a paintbrush. So again, he is kind of bringing that back, and he's doing it better than anyone else.
And to decide the best way to work out exactly how the mind worked, he decided to cut open people's brains.
Did he get anywhere with that? Yeah, go ahead.
After a while of doing that, he decided to start working on dead people's brains.
There we go. Good call. Good move.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you a couple questions while I'm cutting your brain open.
Yeah.
Be honest.
Yeah. Think a happy thought. Let me just see what's going on.
What happens? And they're dead. Okay, think sad thoughts. And they're dead. Something's going not right here.
He's like, wow, it's bad luck. I'm just getting a bunch of people that are dying on their deathbed.
What's the one constant in all these deaths?
Asking them to think sad thoughts is what it was. I better at least leave that to the end of the process. When I'm done with them, then they
just
it doesn't leave matter
it. Just
anymore.
Stab. Don't say anything. Just stab and just I don't know. But yeah,
again, it's your approach in the bedroom. Just stab.
You'll eventually get the right. Anyway, go ahead.
The right hole.
They're all. You let you know the secret, Cam. They're all the right. I'm sorry. Oh my God! You sure this is not hour three? Anyway,
your approach to sex is like whack-a-mole. It's just like you call whack-a-hole, poke-a-hole. It's just. This one, that one, this one, that one. Oh, back to that one. Hey, this one.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it, my friend. That's how I live my life, and that's how my penis consequently lives his life too. Anyway.
When he was dissecting brains, apparently he was trying to figure out the precise location where connections were made between emotions and motions and sensory perceptions. And this was one of his lifelong obsessions. His two lifelong obsessions were figuring out exactly how the brain works
right.
and drawing dicks with legs. Those were the two things.
That's all you need. Yeah.
That he just could not get enough of. Right. And sometimes he would do them at the same time. He'd be cutting odd. Open a brain right. with right. one hand because he was ambidextrous
right.
and drawing a picture of a dick with legs about to penetrate a flowery butthole
Hell, with his other hand
because that's right. Leonardo da Vinci, man. Yeah. That's why he is the greatest.
Leo the motherfucker. Anyway, yeah.
But LBV, like you were, baby, you know me. What?
But like you were saying at the end of the previous episode, for all of his genius and people who do know who he is, yeah, he's known as a genius, whatever, but it's not like he's got a lot to show for it. And like you said, other people like Botticelli, they're getting commissions from the Medici. They're getting tons of cash. And so
the Medici?
Who Medici, are the Medici? Sorry, Medici. So between
Johnny Medici.
Hey, that's the other family. That's the non-rich family. At? Yeah,
forget about it. Johnny DiMicci.
Now you got me doing it. They were the Johnny poor half. Johnny DiMicci. They don't like to talk about it. But uh-huh. yeah, he sees all these people doing amazing things, and he knows he's awesome. But it's not like he's got a lot to show for it. But here's the ironic part. He knows, or he should know why. It's because he can't ever really finish anything because he thinks he can do better at some point in the future. So it's a vicious cycle.
And there's another thing that might explain mm-hmm. his inability to finish paintings, apart from his perfectionism, and his desire to cut up brains, and that might be his depression. Because he seems yes. to have been really fucking miserable around 1480. Going by his notebooks,
right.
there are lots of notes in there that talk about how miserable he is. There's one section where he's talking about how to make a clock out of lead yeah. and leather in a little bag. And then he writes, "We do not lack devices for measuring these miserable days of ours, in which it should be our pleasure that they be not frittered away without leaving behind any memory of ourselves and the mind of men."
Oh, God. You know who would have a very morbid, depressing TikTok account? It would be Leo in 1480. He'd be lying there, "Yeah, it's Tuesday, and I'm just sitting here, and I'm retouching up this painting. I don't know. I should just turn the paintbrush on myself and maybe paint myself a smile." It'd be like that.
Anyway. Whenever he got a new pen nib, right. he would write the same thing over and over again in his notebooks. "Tell me if anything was ever done. Tell me.
That's right up there.
If anything was ever done.
What is that from The Shining? "All work and no play makes Jack a dull boy." I mean, if he's writing this over and over again, he's starting to get a little, you know, stabby. It's kind of freaky. I'm still getting a little freaked out here.
He just seems to have been really depressed. And as we said before, like his contemporaries are being lauded in yes. Florence and even outside of Florence. And he's not getting any of that. He's getting, you know, sort of favor commissions from his dad,
right.
getting paid then, in firewood.
And even then he can't. Basically, he's got black mascara around his eyes, a black leather trench coat, listening to heavy metal music full of angst, and he's just in that goth whatever right now. He's just really down on himself. Not a pretty sight.
Another point in his notebooks, he writes, "While I thought that I was learning how to live, I have been learning how to die."
Oh, that touched me. Oh.
So he might have been depressed about the fact that he wasn't getting anywhere. Maybe it was the fact that he was a homosexual in a city where – and at a time when being a homosexual was enough to get you executed.
Right.
You know, but the whole artist thing, I think, must have been playing on him.
Mm-hmm.
Botticelli was the favorite painter of the Medici family, Johnny Medici. and the Medici.
Right.
you know, both families.
Oh, they were hiring Botticelli, you know, giving left him and right. Yeah.
Commission after commission. In 1478, Botticelli painted his public depiction of the conspirators who assassinated Giuliano de Medici. Right. And then, as I mentioned in the last episode, when the final guy was captured, Leonardo did a sketch and, you know, hoped he would get the commission to do the painting of it.
He was ready
but
to go.
The Medici gave it to someone else. Damn. Then in 1481,
here we go.
When Pope Sexy summoned a whole bunch of prominent Florentine artists to come to Rome to paint the walls of the Sistine Chapel. Botticelli was there.
Yeah.
Leonardo didn't get a look in.
Did not get an invite. There was nothing in the. He kept checking the mailbox every day, but no, did not get an invitation. So he's 30 years, close to being 30 years old, doesn't have a lot to show for his genius. He's depressed, and oh my God, he didn't get this invite to Rome. So what in the hell is going to happen to this guy now?
Vasari wrote, when a man has learned in Florence as much as he can, if he wishes to do more than live from day to day like an animal and instead desires to become rich, he must take his departure from that place. For Florence treats her craftsmen as time treats its own works, which, when perfected, it destroys and consumes little by little.
Wow. Yeah. And in such a state, this is, and I don't know if you want to rehash it, but at the very first episode that we did, it's in this kind of mental and emotional state where Leo sits down and he writes a letter to the Duke of Milan. And if he's looking to leave Florence, the center, where the Renaissance was created, you know things cannot be going well either for him or inside his head.
So in 1482, the year he turned 30, LDV left Florence for Milan and would live there for the next 17 years.
Damn. Yeah.
His companion was one of his young proteges, Atalante Migliorotti.
Mm-hmm.
He was a 15-year-old budding musician and bum boy.
Right.
And for the trip,
yeah,
Leonardo invented the world's first odometer.
Of course he did.
Using a vehicle wheel. He's like, well, listen, if we're going to make this trip,
might as well.
We have to learn something from it.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's work out exactly how far Milan is from Florence. So he used a wheel, measured the length of the wheel, and then created a little device to measure how many times the wheel turned on their trip. At the end, trip took them about a week. At the end, he calculated the distance as 180 miles, and he was spot on.
Yes. Gee, I mean, again, who would take the time to invent that? Maybe he already had it in his head, maybe had it in his notebook, but the point is, it's like, well, if I'm going to take a trip, what can I learn from this, or how can I, you know, do something? Because I think that's just the way his brain worked, even in the middle of his depression, even in the middle of wanting to get out of Florence. I think this is just who he is.
Yeah, he's a thinker.
Yeah.
Like you, right?
Thinker.
Aww. He's a thinker.
Thank you.
He's a thinker.
Normally a jabber or a stabber, but I'll take thinker. That's fine.
Now, he took with him a silver lyre that he had made. It was actually a gift from Lorenzo de Medici, not the – what did you call him? I forgot.
The trailer park version. The trailer park half of the family. I don't even remember.
Johnny DiMarchi. You're a thinker. Lorenzo apparently commissioned Leonardo to make it, or maybe Leonardo made it and said to Lorenzo, what a good idea if I take this. It was crafted, the silver was crafted into the shape of a horse's skull.
Sure. Sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Remember the shield that we talked about many episodes ago? He can't just make a normal musical instrument. Hmm. It's got to be different in some way.
Yeah, or the helmet that he made.
Yes, there we go.
For when Ludovico came to Florence, Ludovico of Milan.
Yeah.
So, he likes making shit. and he made this, and it seems Leonardo and Atalante were probably part of the 1482 diplomatic delegation
mm-hmm.
that was sent by Lorenzo from Florence to Milan.
February.
To, you know, make sure they were on Ludovico yes. the Moor's good side, Ludovico Sforza.
Yes.
The delegation was headed by Bernardo Rucellai. We've talked about him in the past, wealthy banker, married to Lorenzo's older sister, just mm-hmm. been made Florence's ambassador to Milan.
Ooh,
so this was there was a whole bunch of people that he took with him representing yeah. Florence, a whole bunch of gifts, and Leonardo made and took his gift with him.
Yeah.
By the way, Rucellai apparently introduced the term balance of power.
I love that.
He came up with that to talk about everything that was going on with all of the yeah. Italian states and the emperor, the Holy Roman Emperor and the French kings and all of that kind of stuff. Balance of power.
Yeah, because you've got alliances.
Bernardo Rucellai.
Exactly. You've got alliances all over the place. And the goal is to not, well, at least for someone like the, with Florence, the people running Florence, it's not so much to win a military victory, but if you've got an alliance and someone else has got an alliance and they're roughly the same as far as strength, maybe there won't be a war. You know, it's mutual deterrence and you can get about with making business and spending money on your artists and things like that. So, again, it's something that Europe has done for a very long time, and I'm glad he gave it that title because it just makes it a lot easier to understand. But there's always a war going on. There's always different sides choosing up to go after someone else. And so, yeah, you balance things out and it allows for stability, which is good for business and people's daily lives.
Now, Leonardo apparently felt like this was a permanent trip. He wasn't just, yeah. I'm going to pop down to Milan for yeah. a while and come back. He took all of his shit with him.
Yes, literally. Everything he
packed
valued.
It all up.
Right.
Yeah, made notes of it, what he had on his possession at the time.
Yeah.
And took it with him. Now, Milan had a population of about 125,000 citizens at the time, which makes it about three times as big as Florence.
Ooh.
And a thousand times bigger than where you live, bumfuck Virginia.
Pretty much. And we haven't even had a black plague or a series of them. We, you know, so good for them.
You have had coronavirus.
Yes, yeah. Well, we have more mad cow disease than that. But, yeah, no, it's still it's a big place. Yeah.
Now, the court of Milan, obviously, was a very different place to Florence. It was now ruled by kind of ruled by Ludovico Sforza.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about him in earlier episodes. He was the same age as Leonardo, 30 years old.
Right.
But he wasn't actually the Duke of Milan yet. Not technically. His older brother had been Duke. It was their father who had overthrew the Visconti died, took over.
Right,
he was basically just a mercenary. Said fuck being a mercenary, I'll just take my own city and keep it. Right,
fucking A.
So he took it. Ludovico's elder brother had been duke after the death of their father, but then he got assassinated in 1476, and the title was passed to his 7-year-old son.
Oh, it's going
to
work out fine. Yeah.
And the mother was made the regent. Now, Ludovico sort of fought with the boy's mother for several years, eventually winning in 1481, the year before Leonardo's trip. Right. So he was the regent when Leonardo got there. Of course, eventually he would poison his nephew, but not until 1494 and take full control. Yeah, well, the kid died. He was the full Duke of Milan. But at this point, he's just the regent. But for all intents and purposes, he's acting as if he were the Duke of Milan. And unlike Florence, Milan was not wall-to-wall with master artists, which made it a better opportunity for Leonardo to shine.
Yeah.
He could stand out better at a place like Milan.
Exactly. There wasn't a stable of young artists to come. No, I'm just joking. There wasn't a lot of artists there, even though it's a much bigger city. And like you, I think you were hinting at a second ago, Ludovico, he knows these I won't use the word illegitimate, but basically you want to be able to distract the people. You want to make it look like your reign is maybe ordained by God. So you bring in a bunch of artists, you beautify the place, you spend money on the people. Hopefully they get distracted and they forget. And that's part of what Ludovico wants to do now. So he has this delegation. Some of them are artists coming from Florence. And so we can put them to good use. But yeah, Leo's going to get there, and he's, I don't know if he's sick of painting or if he just needs to take a break from it, but he wants to be able to focus on something else. And like you said, not a lot of artists there. Maybe he can stand out a little more. Not to say that there aren't intellectuals there. You've got the nearby University of Pavia, founded in 1361. So again, there are some smart people there. Many, many very subjects, varied subjects are being studied or discovered or whatever, but hopefully Leo can stand out and actually get a fucking commission and a steady pay and get on with his life.
And all of the scholars and intellectuals that were there because of the nearby university mm-hmm. probably made it attractive to Leonardo, because he's a polymath. He likes studying everything, so he wants to be around other smart people.
Right.
And Ludovico also, it's a court, and he's acting like he's a king. So he's spending a ton of money on making it look glamorous, as you said.
Right.
Like to spend a lot of money on refurbishing his palace and on things like hunting hawks, hounds, and horses, or the three H's, as I always call them.
Oh, okay, that's three. I didn't know.
Four H's and heroin. The five important H's in life. Hawks, hounds, horses, hoes, and heroin.
He's got his priorities. That's all you need, really. Yeah. Yeah. So, but the thing was, you probably ran across this, but he spends a lot of money on himself and beautifying the place when it comes to actually giving out salaries for his astrologer, government officials. Not the most generous person in the world.
A little bit stingy.
Yeah.
But, you know, these. Yeah. Yeah, he knew astrology was bullshit, so he's like, I'm not fucking paying you any money. Fuck you.
I just go through the motions.
Yeah. I've got you on staff so I can say I've got one, but like, I'm not going to pay you to do that bullshit. Don't come near
me. Exactly.
Yeah.
don't even now, fucking eye contact. Yeah.
In the very first episode of our Leonardo series, I did read out his job application mm-hmm. to Ludovico.
Right.
And he'd probably already been in Milan for a while because there's a suggestion in that he knew what was important to Ludovico. He talked about how he could build the statue of Ludovico's father on a horse.
Right.
Which is something that apparently Sforza had said that he wanted. And Leonardo's like, oh, I heard you wanted this thing. Well, I can build that for you.
I can fucking do it. Bronze, whatever. Yeah.
And this also explains another part of that job application. Now, as I mentioned in the first episode, it's mostly about his military engineering capabilities. He doesn't even mention any of his paintings. Yeah. He does say at the end, oh, I can paint good too. But and I said at the time that he doesn't think of himself as a painter. That's a side hustle. He thinks of himself as an engineer. But really, what's going on here is he apparently knew that that was what was most important to Sforza at the time.
Yeah.
Sforzas had taken power by force. They were faced with constant threats from local potential rebellions or from invasions from other Italian states or the French king.
Yeah.
And, you know, he wanted to put himself forward as a military engineer, even though he wasn't.
No,
a military engineer.
What really is? I mean, I can draw it down, make it really look good. I can come up with some things. No, I haven't built it yet, but I'm more of a theoretician, but I'm pretty sure we can work this out.
So thanks for coming in today, Leonardo. It's an impressive CV you've sent in.
Thank you.
I see that you've you said that you're like the world's greatest military engineer. That's true. Can we see anything that you've built before, and can we talk to any references? Do you have any references?
You know what? I find, and this is me, but references, it's all in the state of mind. It's the person's perception. So no, you can't have any references. No, I can't show you anything physically, but let me paint you, and I do paint, but that's not what I'm talking about right now. Let me paint you a picture with my words. So everybody, could someone turn out the lights, please? Thank you. Close your eyes. I need you to close your eyes. I'm going to put on this gentle music or warlike music, whatever tickles your fancy. And I'm going to describe what I can do. I can build bridges. I can help you destroy bridges. I can build things that sucks water out of trenches. I'm a cannon fucking master. I can help you fight at sea. I can help dig tunnels under the ground. I can build armored chariots. I can fucking do it all with catapults. Have I done these things? No. I think that's a technicality. I feel really strongly that I can do them. Where do I sign?
So you've never built anything before. Have you at least been in a war before?
In a war. No, not in, around, near. Not even that, really. No. But I'm not a soldier. I'm an engineer. Trust me. I can make shit that will kill people. I'm a vegetarian. I don't believe in hurting animals. But I will love to fucking make stuff to tear people apart. Where do I sign?
So not the strongest job application or interview. Good application. Not a great interview process.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But – you know, after settling into Milan for a while, for whatever reason, this is exactly what he did. Yeah. He, when he was still in Florence, he had drawn a few military devices.
Yeah.
One was something you hinted at before, a mechanism for knocking down ladders of people trying to climb up a wall. It was like a big – there were levers that would be connected to sticks that would be poked through the holes in the walls, and you'd just pull the lever and it would knock their ladders down. You didn't even have to climb up on top and push them. You just hit click.
I really did like that invention. You basically, you have a wall section in front of you, you poke some holes through it, you put some poles in there, and you attach a pole to either side, either end of the poles. And so, yeah, when you push the poles out by pulling a rope, it literally pushes the top of the enemy's ladder further and further away from the wall until it leans the other way and falls over with all those people on it, probably killing them. A very direct, simple, but efficient idea. And that's kind of what, you know, I've come to expect from this guy. It doesn't have to be complicated with 27 moving parts. This will push a ladder away, and that's what you want. I thought it was pretty cool.
Yeah, me too. Yeah. He had another idea for stopping people getting over castle walls. It was like a propeller that you'd put on the top and it would just chop them in half when they got up there, like a, you know, just a swirling propeller.
Damn. Yeah.
Like a fan blade. Chop them up.
But you got to remember, he's playing to an audience of one. And like you said, Ludovico is either there's going to be a rebellion because I took power through force, or the fucking French are going to come and I got to be ready to defend this walled city. So again, Leo knows exactly what he needs to say to this guy, and hopefully it will pan out for him.
He also invented famously something akin to a tank,
yes,
an armored siege machine that could go out and attack troops that were coming in.
Mm-hmm.
So, look, he had a bunch of great ideas, but a lot of them weren't entirely original. Thanks to the invention of the printing press,
aha,
a lot of books were available that had military gadgets in them that he would study and build on top of. One of the authors that he was stealing these ideas from was written by Roger Bacon.
Good name.
Great name. Yeah. The inventor of Bacon. He was the first person to, you know, decide that you could, you know, cut a pig and then just cut little strips off it and smoke it, and it would be delicious.
But here's the part of the history books that you don't know. He invents this, and people go, this is fucking amazing. What are we going to call it? We're going to name it after me, a slice of Roger. Should we maybe try your last name? Bacon. I mean, if you think that's a winner over Roger, I think Roger's the way to go. But if you think bacon's the way, fuck it. Have a slice of bacon.
They market tested it. They got in some, you know.
Stan and Barry.
Yeah, Stan.
No, yeah. This Roger tastes like shit. Oh, this is the best Roger I've ever had. No one wants to say this is the best Roger I've ever had because that's a penis. Oh, come on.
But have you tried Canadian Roger? The Canadian Roger is the best Roger.
Oh, love it. Have it every morning.
I'm gonna call it Roger from now on. let's make that a thing. Make it stick.
Coffee mug. Work a coffee mug in there. Anyway.
I do want to talk about Roger Bacon because he is a fascinating guy, also known as Dr. Mirabilis.
Oh.
He was a British philosopher. You know, nothing good has ever come out of Britain except Roger Bacon. British philosopher Franciscan friar from the 13th century.
Okay.
He was a big fan of the study of nature through empiricism. And, you know, wrote a ton of stuff. And also he borrowed or stole or adapted ideas from the Islamic golden period, right, where they had worked out a lot of interesting shit. He was thought to be a wizard because of how smart he was and how much stuff he knew in his books. There were like people that didn't help. The pointy hat. Yeah.
Sorry.
I'm the whiz. He used to walk around saying that. I'm the whiz.
And now I'm whizzing. Get out of the way.
In 1267, he wrote his great work, the Opus Majus, which translates literally as great work. If nothing else, he was humble. He said, I'm going to name this sliced pig after myself. And I'm going to call my great work the great work. I mean, let's be honest.
Yeah.
Let's not fuck around. No, false right. modesty, that's for right. the cows. It's great. I'm great. It's great. I invented bacon, motherfucker. What have you done?
That's right.
You invent bacon, you can call your work the great work.
Until then,
invented bacon.
Shut the fuck up, oatmeal.
Right. Is there anything more delicious than bacon? No, I don't think so.
No.
I invented it. Fuck off.
How would you like some Roger in your mouth right now? See, it still doesn't work. It's, but I'm going to call it that from now on, too.
Yeah, it does, kind of.
Sorry. Where were we?
His Opus Majus talks about mathematics, optics, alchemy, astronomy, theories on the positions and sizes of the celestial bodies.
Damn,
he was all over it, man.
Yeah,
he was a great, great thinker.
Right.
The other guy that Leonardo borrowed military engineering ideas from was Roberto Valturio.
Nice.
More of a contemporary, 1405 to 1475, an Italian engineer. He was the author of a book called De Re Militari in 1472,
mm-hmm.
when it was handwritten at first. Oh. The sponsor of it sent copies, handwritten copies, to the French king, the Hungarian king, the Duke of Urbino, and Lorenzo di Medici, and Johnny DiMarchi. As well, Johnny DiMarchi got one as
they sent it to the trailer park, P.O. Box 1. Yeah.
Trailer park. He was living in Jersey, man. He had a nice little place in Jersey. Forget don't about you know? It. Yeah. Hey, forget about it. Johnny D.
I don't even know what the fuck that means. I just heard it. Anyway.
It means asshole.
Does it? Oh, okay.
I think so. My Italian teacher taught us that. We did a whole lesson with our Italian teacher 6 months ago on how to swear in Italian.
That's hilarious.
Strunz.
Oh.
That's for our Italian listeners.
Right.
So the handwritten copies were sent to a bunch of people. Then it got printed later on. 22 handwritten copies survived to this very day.
Wow. It must have been
And
important.
I posted... Yeah. I posted images of one, a screenshot of one on our Facebook group yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
It's of like a siege machine in the shape of a dragon, the size of a castle wall, attacking a castle wall.
Good God.
He was like, you know, imagine you see that coming at you.
Yeah, you shit yourself.
There's no reason. Why are these siege machines so boring? They look like a siege machine.
Spice it up.
Dress it up.
Yeah, let's go.
Yeah, make it look like a dragon. Come on, people. Put some effort into this.
Get the theater people in here. Come on. Let's go.
I think we should be doing this today with tanks and shit like that.
Yes.
Like dress them up.
Petite, you know, eyes. Yeah.
And then when you're not in war, you can use them in a parade.
Yes.
Like we do, like Trump wanted to do military parades.
Oh, yeah. Loves
you could do military parades where you're, you know, North Korea style, have your tanks going down the main street. But they should all be dressed up as different animals so the kids get something out of it as well, you know?
Here comes the Lamb Battalion, the Goose Squad. I don't know. I don't know. The caterpillar.
I think he
division.
Was onto something.
I don't know. I think we're on. Yeah. God, we're smart.
Now, Valturio had a drawing of a cart with rotating scythes coming out of the wheels. Now, this isn't a new idea. We talked about this in Alexander's day. Alexander, I seem to recall, built carts with rotating scythes to cut off the legs of elephants.
Right.
When he was being attacked.
Yes.
In Persia by Darius's elephants.
Yes.
Or Xerxes, one of those. Darius, I think. Darius the Third.
Yes. Yeah.
He would, have carts with scythes run through to, you know, scare the fuck out of the elephants.
Right. I mean, is it cruel? Yes, but better them than me, I think Alexander was thinking. So they gotta go.
So Leonardo took this and thought, well, that doesn't look scary.
Take it up a notch. So you've got this very limited machine as far as death and destruction. But when you take something like that and you match it with Leonardo's imagination, you know he's going to be able to do something with it. And again, he's trying to come up with something to be able to sell to Ludovico to make a living and to try to get back on track as far as being taken seriously.
So his version of it not only has blades coming out the wheels, but also has blades at the front of it.
Yes.
Or at the back of it, I guess, depending on which way you're dragging the chariot.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly, yeah.
He's like, just blades everywhere, motherfuckers. Blades, lots of spinning blades.
Attach it to a horse and just have a horse run through a crowd, and trust me, all those guys will be a lot shorter by the time the horse is finished.
Just whip the horses.
Yes.
Just get a whole bunch of horses, attach these things to them, whip them, let them run off into the enemy, just going to shred the enemy.
Yes. I'm assuming you, like me, looked at videos on YouTube. Oh, my God, the twirling blades. And, of course, the faster the horse goes, the faster the wheels go, the faster the blades go. And, again, instead of just cutting you, I mean, it literally would take someone's lower legs off if it was going fast enough. So scary.
And to make that point, in one of his drawings of the scythed chariot, he actually drew bodies lying on the ground with their legs sliced off and pieces of their bodies scattered everywhere.
Yes.
Just so you make sure you understood what was going on here.
Here's my CV, bitch. Yeah, take this.
On the side of the drawing, he has two soldiers just at the moment that they're being sliced in half. He's like, you know, no time to be delicate here. I need to.
I am an artist.
What I'm wondering is how anatomically correct were these bodies?
Right. Good point.
You know, did he really, did his perfectionism come out in this?
Well, the part that I found funny was the riders pulling the thing actually have beautifully billowing capes behind them, almost like Superman. So again, even when he's doing this to show, this is how my machine would kill somebody. Again, I am a vegetarian. The guys are going to look good doing it because he's a serious fucking artist, even when he's trying not to be.
But also, I mean, when you are chopping people in half on the battlefield, you want to look your best, right? I mean, this is important work.
That's true.
Look the part, be the part, motherfucker, as Prop Joe said.
Right. Dress for the job you want. And I want to be a leg cutter. I want to be a fancy leg cutter. Horseman. Yes.
Well, no, they wanted to, you know, be generals, but they're like, I'm only a leg cutter now. I'm the leg cutter chariot puller today.
If you look at my dream board, It's a picture of me in a general's uniform cutting someone.
Yeah.
Anyway, yes. Yeah.
I want to be the guy that gives the orders to the leg cutters.
Oh.
Not just the guy pulling the leg cutters.
And when I reach that point, I will be able to afford all the Roger I want. Love me some Roger in the morning. I'm a Rogerarian. Oh, God, I can't wait. Just pile on the Rogers.
With that, that's it for today. You can go and enjoy some Roger, everyone.